Okay, Human Services and Rural Health Policy Committee will come to order. I'll say right off the bat, we are not going to do the 388 today. We're going to carry it over until February.
February.
This bill needs more work. We haven't finished it. So we're not going to hear 388. Okay.
Thank you.
We will hear. Okay, we're going to hear Senate Bill 598. And actually, we're going to open a work session on 598. Tom, would you come up, please?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, 598 was originally heard on March 11th. It initially required drug manufacturers to establish a pharmaceutical take-back program approved and regulated by Department of Human Services. Creates an advisory committee on pharmaceutical take-back programs and establishes and continually appropriates money to a pharmaceutical take-back program fund for departmental regulation of programs. Declared emergency effective upon passage. Right. We do have -3 amendments on this bill. It provides a definition of drug and delineates those items excluded from the definition. It requires Department of Human Services to implement a pharmaceutical take-back pilot program in at least two communities, one being rural and one being urban. It provides components of the pilot program and the application process for participation in the program, and it requires the Department of Human Services to adopt rules establishing a one-time fee to cover costs of administering the program to manufacturers who operate the pharmaceutical take-back program.
Okay. Tom, would you...
Sure. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Tom Holt here today on behalf of Pharma and ASI, which is a biotech company. Just had an opportunity to look at the -3s. We will be in opposition to these as we were to the original bill. Just to refresh your memory in terms of the original bill and the issue, we regard this as sort of a solution in search of a problem, in that the very tiny amounts of trace pharmaceuticals being found in the water, we're finding them because we can, not because they are a hazard. They are mostly there because more than 90% because they pass through our bodies and into the sewage treatment systems. This is a sewage treatment issue, not a drinking water issue, to the extent that it's an issue at all. We are aware of some voluntary programs and going on for allowing consumers to bring back their medications in Deschutes County. I believe there is one, Senator Telfer, and we're supportive of those kinds of efforts. The difficulty when we get into a mandatory program is it opens up all sorts of regulatory issues that would cause more problem than what they're worth. We think it'll be better to allow these voluntary programs to continue to go as they are and not impose state regulation upon them. With that, I'd be happy to take questions.
Thank you.
Just a comment. I do feel that with the success of the take-back programs that some communities have taken on their own, there is a lot of medication being left, obviously left in our cabinets and being disposed of. When I hear that there were how many, there were tons and almost tons of medications being, at least truckloads being brought in, and I really would like to see the this idea be expanded throughout the state.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Well, and I concur. I spent a lot of time, because I thought it was, basically not a bad idea, so I spent a lot of time in my community talking with the police and the pharmacies, and actually we are doing it in my community, and we're doing it for no charge, and Cook County's now doing it, and Prineville's doing it, so I think, it's getting out there, and when I talked to the Deschutes County Sheriff, Larry Blanton, he said they're doing it at no cost, because they think that's what the taxpayers want them to do, and that's what they want, the way they want their tax dollars used. So kudos to Deschutes County and Cook County and Prineville, Redmond, and Bend that are doing it, and hopefully it'll spread throughout the state. I know Winston is also doing it, so I think it'll just catch on, hopefully, and it'll be done.
Okay. Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. I do think that to a large degree this is a solution in search of a problem, and I think communities can step up to this. But beyond that, when I look at the volume of things we're going to be tasking DHS to do this session, I think at some point in time we need to draw the line, and I think there are more important tasks being given to that agency than this.
Okay. Senator Bridger.
Mr. Chairman, I think we have a problem. I just don't think this is the solution, and my problem with this particular solution is actually the funding mechanism. I guess that we all look at the manufacturers of drugs in a different way, and I have no relationship with pharma, and I'm sure that he knows that I do not. But I'm just speaking in general terms of all drug manufacturers. They manufacture the products that make us well, or at least they hope they're going to make us well when we're ill. And so what we're saying is that they make the product, then they send it to the pharmacies. The doctors write the prescriptions, and they give me a prescription. Now, I don't understand how it is the drug manufacturers concerned that I don't take all of my prescription, or that people that are ill have prescriptions left over. They simply are manufacturing the product. So I think to cause them to have to fund this latter part, the third phase, is just unfair. But as far as a problem, yes, there's a problem. Is this the solution? No, this is not the solution.
Could I say one more?
Yes.
Just one more comment. The cost of this is $394,000. It's a drop in the bucket to pharma. Drop in the bucket. And when I take a look at our take-back programs with the computers, the manufacturers have stepped up, and they help fund the take-back of the electronic equipment, et cetera. And to me, it would have been very nice if pharma had stepped up and been willing, like the electronic industry did, in take-back programs, because not all communities can come forward. They just don't have the staffing to be able to do this.
Okay. Mr. Chair,
Okay. Other comments? Yes.
Yep. I'd like to respond to that, because I can understand Senator Miles Anderson's rationale there. But I do believe that equipment and things are different. And that doesn't mean that I'm looking at it right. But in my own rationale, I looked at that. I thought about that, because, after all, we have lots of products that if the product is defective, it's a different thing, or if it wears out. To me, in my own mind, and rationalizing it, Senator, is that there's a difference in that and in medicine that I did not take and is left over. So I just could not connect the dots in that.
Okay. Other comments? I think we have a constitutional problem, so we will close the work session on Senate Bill 598, and we will open. Yeah. Well, we'll have it by the end of this.
He actually had this open and another bill and get that the way he did.
Let me look at 550.
Realized he had opened the wrong one, so, but that's okay.
We're going to stand at ease for just a minute. Work session on Senate Bill 649.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, 649 has been heard on three previous occasions, March 16th, April 15th, and April 22nd. It requires drug manufacturers and wholesale drug outlets to adopt a marketing code of conduct, provide and conduct training, and perform an annual audit and report information to the State Board of Pharmacy annually. The board will report the findings by March 31st of the regularly scheduled legislative session. We do have dash one amendment, which modifies the provision in the measure from the term audit to self-audit by the manufacturer or the wholesale drug outlet.
Okay.
No, but we haven't adopted anything yet, right?
Tom, would you please?
We have it, and we have the...
we got the FISRIS.
We have the FISRIS.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, for the record, Tom Holt here today on behalf, here on this bill on behalf of ASI. ASI is a biotech company. We're in support of Senate Bill 649 with the dash one amendment, which is a clarifying amendment at lines 15 and 29. It just clarifies that the audit required is a self-audit rather than a Big Five accounting type audit. But what the bill does is, with the amendment, is require manufacturers to have a marketing code of conduct that they act, that they enforce with their employees, and to report that code to the Board of Pharmacy so the board is aware that it's a that it has teeth, and to annually report that they are enforcing it. That's essentially what the bill does. This is modeled on a statute from Nevada that's been enforced now for 2 years and has been working fairly well from the reports that I've received. While this bill doesn't call it out, what it describes is the pharma marketing code, which is now fairly restrictive with its latest revisions. In Oregon statute, we tend not to identify organizations, and that's why it's drafted the way that it is. With that, I'd be happy to take questions.
I might say that Senate Bill 845, which is Senator Bates's bill, he is going to sign on to this bill. He's willing to drop his bill. He's very... still hasn't... didn't feel like he got it right.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jim Gardner for Pharma. You've all seen this. I have extra copies if you wanted to see what the code was one more time. But I think you've all received copies.
Well,
of
everyone
it.
Has received a copy.
Mm-hmm.
Discussion. We're in a work
Mr.
session.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash one amendment. Excuse me, dash one amendment, Senate Bill 649.
Okay, Senator Cruz moves the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 649. Discussion? Yes.
Just comment. Hopefully, self-audit will be effective. I'll just put that on the record, because sometimes when you're watching your own chicken coop, sometimes it you let things pass.
Madam Chair, I...
No, you're the chair.
You're the chair.
Madam Chair. Tomorrow, it's... Tomorrow, it's... You're the chair tomorrow. Okay. Senator Mona Sanderson, I came into this session with the idea to pass a code for pharma. I took a look at the one that Vermont. Yeah, and it was a good code. Unfortunately, we would have had to establish a agency to oversee that particular code. I know there have been bills introduced on the House side at different times to impose some restrictions on pharma that have had a fiscal as well and didn't go anywhere. This code is, I think, enforceable by complaint. So if there is a complaint made, not only will there be a pharma penalty, but there could be a state penalty. I mean, it's we don't have a penalty listed in the statute, but it's to enforce and give some teeth to the pharma code for the state of Oregon. Now, other states have done this. Now, this is the beginning, perhaps, and if we want to look at sanctions in addition to that, we can do that. We can add that. As the pharma code changes, the statute will continue to enforce the pharma code. And if it gets less strict, we might want to go back and make some adjustments. If it gets more strict, then we can decide what we want to do. But there is not a fiscal, there is not an additional cost to the agency, and I think this is the best course of action. Now, Senator Bates had a bill that he has worked on, and he's had a number of amendments to it, and he feels a little bit frustrated that the bill isn't really what he wanted to do, and so I said, why don't you sign on to this bill? And he will be a chief co-sponsor along with me of this particular bill. So that's the rationale for why we're hearing this bill this morning. Discussion. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
We're in a work session.
Did we adopt? Have I made a motion yet?
You did.
Okay. Did we adopt the dash one yet?
That's what you just did.
We did. Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill.
You didn't take a vote on the dash ones. I just made a comment. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay. Any other comments or concerns about the Dash 1 Amendment? Seeing none, so ordered.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 649 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 649 to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Would the clerk call the roll, please?
Senator Mona Sanderson.
Aye.
Senator Burgess.
Aye.
Senator Telfer.
Aye.
Vice Chair Cruz.
Aye.
Chair
Marshall. Aye. Okay. I will carry the bill. Senate Bill 641 goes to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
649.
Okay. Senate Bill 158. Dr. Higginson, would you come up, please?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 158 has been heard twice previously, back on February 4th and again on March 16th. Provides requirements on ambulatory surgical centers and providers, modifies the license fees, and authorizes alternative procedures for on-site inspections for specific health care facilities and home health agencies. Requires Department of Human Services to establish procedures for filing complaints against home health agencies and in-home care agencies that will ensure the confidentiality of the complainant. Establishes repercussions for retaliation against an employee for notifying authorities of inappropriate care or other violations. Requires home health agency to follow treatment plan established and reviewed by physician or the nurse practitioner, allowed the Department of Human Services to assess civil penalties of $1,000 per day for noncompliance or $10,000 for each 30-day period of noncompliance on individuals, health care facilities, home health agencies, and in-home care agencies. There are -2 amendments which have a variety of provisions from the original bill. I don't know if you want me to go through those or if you'd like, Grant, no. Dr. Higginson.
Dr. Higginson, would you bring us up to date on this, please?
Yes. Chair Morissette, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Dr. Grant Higginson, and I'm the administrator for the Office of Community Health and Health Planning, Public Health Division, Department of Human Services. And when I first testified about this bill back in February, I think you may recall that I said that this was a big bill. It really is a health care licensing and certification program reform bill, and that program is in my office. I said it was a big bill. We had conceptual agreement with all the stakeholders, but there still was a lot of work that needed to be done on it. And so for the past couple of months, we have been working with stakeholders to come up with amendments, and those stakeholders include the Oregon Association of Hospital and Health Systems, the Oregon Ambulatory Surgical Center Association, the Oregon Home Care Association, and the Oregon Medical Association. And what you see in front of you today, the -2 amendments, are those amendments, and as far as I know, all of those stakeholders are all on board with the amendments. And what I've passed out is 2 pages explaining what those amendments do, and I wasn't going to go through all of them, but I was going to mention just a couple. The very first one talks about that throughout the bill there are a number of places where the fees have been changed to support the program, and as I mentioned before when I testified, the point here is to have a licensing and certification program that's going to ensure on-site visits every 3 years and aggressive investigation of complaints, and that's what those fees go to support. Another thing that is a substantial change is that some of the detail about ambulatory surgical centers, what kind of procedures they can provide, has been deleted, and the idea there, and this was at the request of the Ambulatory Surgical Centers Association, the idea there is that if those things need to be addressed, they would better be dressed in rule rather than statute. Another thing that was done was we clarified what an investment interest is. I testified the last time that we are requiring some new disclosures, including whether or not an individual referring to a facility has a financial interest in that facility, so we put clarifying language there. One of the things that we've done around hospitals is change the entire fee structure so that in addition to the regular routine fees that they would be, licensing fees that they would be providing, we would also be able to charge fees for inspections related to complaints, so that those hospitals that have the most complaints would be paying higher fees than those hospitals that do not have complaints. Another thing that we tried to do throughout the bill was make it clear that any of the facilities or agencies that we license or certify, that they can, instead of having inspection done by state staff, can use a recognized accrediting body that we then say meets the standards that need to be met for that particular facility or agency. And throughout the bill, we have made those changes. Another thing that we did was change the definition of an ambulatory surgical center so that at the present time in the -2 amendments, it excludes physicians' offices where they're regularly doing surgery using local anesthesia or conscious sedation. And the reason for this, we believe that those facilities should be under some kind of regulatory oversight, but the OMA made a very convincing argument that we really then are getting into possibly conflicting with the Oregon Medical Board and their authority. And so what we have agreement with the Medical Association and the Medical Board is to work over the interim to figure out who, if anybody, should be regulating those facilities. And then another significant thing that happened with the -2 amendments is that we removed infusion providers from those agencies that we would have oversight over. And the reason we did that is in talking with the industry and talking with the Board of Pharmacy, they are already licensed by the Board of Pharmacy. We do not want to dual license them. I think there are some things that we would like to see happen to make sure that, that not only the pharmaceutical side of things are being licensed, but also that the home health component of those services are under regulatory oversight as well. But again, this is something that we will work with the Board of Pharmacy and Industry on over the interim. And so with that, I'll stop and be happy to answer any questions about the amendments or the bill in general.
Questions?
Yes.
Senator Telfer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's some there are substantial increases in many of the fees throughout the bill. Who's the ultimate payer of these fees, fee increases, or these fees?
Mr. Chair, Senator Telfer, with any fees, the industry is the one that is paying for it, but my assumption is that eventually that will be passed on to consumers. And one thing I would like to mention is that you're right that there are substantial increases in virtually all of the facilities and agencies that we license, but I would like to remind you that, you know, most of the fees have not been increased for over 15 years. And Our feeling is that, it's not a feeling. We know that there simply are not the resources to do the level of inspections that we think is the industry standard, and so that's what those increased fees are going to do.
Senator Montana.
I have a few questions. One is the ambulatory surgical center on board with these amendments?
Sure.
I see nods in the back. So they have worked with you, and they agree with the fee change.
Chairman Morissette and Senator Montes-Anderson, yes. And I believe that everyone is on board. And I actually do want to thank all of those stakeholders that I mentioned before, the Hospital Association, ASC Association, Health Home Care Association, and Medical Association, that all of them have been very willing and cooperative partners. And no one wants to see a fee increase, but they do understand that this is an important bill, that it is going to give the state the regulatory oversight that's needed, and have been willing to accept those fee increases even during these tough financial times.
Follow-up?
Yes.
On page 4 of the amendments, because I really haven't gone through it as carefully as I feel I should, on line 19, it says the department may include hospital satellites on a hospital's license in accordance with the rules. So they wouldn't be inspected on the every 3-year basis like ASCs now will be?
Chair Morissette and Senator Montes-Anderson, yes, they would be.
They would be.
Yes, they would.
Okay.
But we needed that satellite language in order to be able to spell out what those are.
Okay, then on follow-up,
yes.
On page 7, when you talk about an on-site follow-up survey to verify, line 9, to verify compliance with a plan of correction in an amount not to exceed $225, I didn't understand what that was, what that meant.
Mr. Chair and Senator Montes-Anderson, we go out and do an inspection and find deficiencies, site deficiencies, and then the facility is responsible for coming up with a corrective plan of action. And so that follow-up survey would be to go back out and check to make sure that the action plan that they have spelled out is actually being complied with.
And then another follow-up, I still, the same page, line 18 through 24, can you explain what that means? The department shall apportion the total amount charged under subsection among hospitals at the end of each calendar year based on the number of complaint investigations.
Right, and Mr. Chair and Senator Montes-Anderson, that's what I was trying to explain with it's trying to have the fees reflect the actual work that is spent at a facility. And so that in addition to a base fee based on the size of a hospital, that we would also have the authority to charge for the level, the history of complaints that they've had over the previous year.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair.
Yes. Senator Virgil.
Could I ask a question? I believe in
in this explanation, though, that it says that the hospitals will not be charged for an investigation that's carried out as a result of an employee complaint. Did you say something different just then?
Yes, I did say something different just then. Mr. Chair and Senator Verger. The issue about not charging for employee complaints is that we don't want to get in the middle of labor management issues. And so any outside complaint that we're getting from a patient or a family member, we will follow up on those. We will still follow up on complaints that we receive from employees, but we don't want to set it up where employees could have hundreds of complaints in order to cost the facility a whole lot of money as part of a labor management dispute. And that's why that particular language is in.
So, Mr. Chair,
yes.
Just to follow, so that's an employee complaint versus a patient complaint.
Oh, okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Any other comments?
Mr. Chair, I move the -2 amendment to Senate Bill 158.
Senator Cruz moves the -2 amendment to Senate Bill 158. Discussion? Opposition, seeing none, so moved.
Mr. Chair, I move the rules be suspended.
Senator Verger,
it's okay.
You don't have to be here.
For okay,
unanimous
right.
Rule?
Unanimous of the members present as long as it's a quorum.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I move the rules be suspended for the purpose of sending Senate Bill 158 to the Committee on Ways and Means without a fiscal statement.
Okay. Senator Cruz moves the rules be suspended to send Senate Bill 158 to Ways and Means without a fiscal statement. Comments? Yes. Senator Chair.
I'm going to oppose this, and the reason is this. I understand that industry is in support because they're just going to pass this on to the consumer. I can tell you that in my neck of the woods with 20% unemployment, now is not the time to put more hardship on anybody. I don't care if they're a patient or anybody on a fee increase. I think 15 years without a review of fee increases is ridiculous. We ought to be looking at them sooner than that, but frankly, now is not the time to ask Oregonians to spend more on medical and health care. So I will not be voting for the suspension of the rules.
I guess with that we'll close the work session.
It's only a majority.
No, suspend the rules.
Unanimous.
Oh, yeah.
Unanimous.
Of those present. Okay.
Yeah, you need to record the.
Okay. Yes. Let's. Would you call the roll, please?
Senator Montana.
Aye.
Senator Verger.
Aye.
Senator Telfer.
No.
Aye. Chair Cruz.
Aye.
Chair Morissette.
Aye.
Now you can close it.
Okay. The major.
Mr. Chair, I'd just like to think. Could I?
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
Suspension of the rules fails. Yes.
Now to the original bill. I think it's a tragedy that we haven't done this. The healthcare industry, and especially ambulatory surgical surgery centers, are doing very well in this economy. They are actually saving patients money. When you have a cataract surgery in an ambulatory surgical center, it is $2,200 to $2,500 versus $8,000 in a hospital. So in this sense, this bill was extremely important, and it does save money, yet we want to make sure that the standards are the same. So I feel it's a tragedy that we were not able to move this bill with all the work that both the industry and the hospitals and the department did to make a bill happy for everyone. Thank you.
Yes. Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. I would have voted against the bill as well, simply because to increase fees on hospitals during a time frame when we have a bill in Ways and Means that potentially could tax them out of existence makes no sense.
Okay. Other comments? Thank you. We will open the work session on Senate Bill 646.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 646 was originally heard on April 22nd. It requires the Department of Human Services to determine and submit to Oregon Department of Administrative Services budget level for Type B area agencies calculated at 95% of the cost to the Department of Human Services if clients were served by the department. It requires Oregon Department of Administrative Services to include budget level in the governor's budget request to the Legislative Assembly. There is a dash 2 amendment which modifies the provision requiring the DHS to adopt by rule a methodology for determining biennial budget levels for Type B area agencies for planning and administering programs for elderly persons and persons with disabilities, which include both direct and indirect costs. It requires the department submit a budget request to Department of Administrative Services based on budget levels determined by the methodology.
Okay.
We do. We do have this. We got it this morning. So there is no fiscal. So do we need the ones and twos or just twos? Just the twos. Okay. Mr. Chair, I move the dash two amendment to Senate Bill 646. Senator Cruz moves the dash two amendments to Senate Bill 646. Discussion.
Opposition, seeing none, so moved.
I'll be opposing this bill unless I had a little bit explanation, better explanation of what the dash twos are.
Okay. Mr. Daves, would you come up, please? Dash twos. Would you like?
Would you just refresh what these amendments would do? Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, James Taves from the Department of Human Services, Senior and People with Disabilities Division. The dash twos simply require us to do what we're already doing, which is to, by formula, set the 95% standard for area agencies on aging against which a state office of similar size and composition would otherwise be funded, and to include that in our agency budget request to the Department of Administrative Services. We already do that. The existing statutory language says after we've gone through that formula, determined the budget amount, we'll consider that in developing our budget. As a matter of practice for the last three biennia, we have included that in our agency request. I think that was the original intent of the bill when it was passed in 2003, I believe. So we're okay with the bill. From our perspective, it simply memorializes what we already do.
Thank you.
Okay. Other comments? Okay. Thank you.
Do we have the fiscal? Yes, we do.
There's no fiscal impact on the bill. We just received it this morning.
But we don't have it here.
Yes. Well,
I have a copy.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes.
Well, we'll bang the gavel on the dash twos yet. So
dash twos have passed. Okay.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 646 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 646-2 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. This further discussion.
Oh, Mr. Chair, can I amend the motion? And to the floor with a due pass recommendation and recommend a subsequent referral to Ways and Means be rescinded.
Okay.
Because there's no fiscal.
Mm-hmm.
So.
But we do have the official of the statement.
We have the statement that says there's no fiscal impact.
So that's an appropriate motion.
Okay. To the floor with a due pass recommendation and rescind a referral to Ways and Means.
Yeah.
Okay. The purpose of this bill is, and it is kind of frustrating that 95% of equity for doing the same job that 95% for doing the same job that state workers do, I think is almost unacceptable. It's unacceptable if they go below that, which it has been. It's been down into the 80s, and I was going to introduce a bill saying that they would have to pay 100% of equity, the same as they pay as if the state workers were doing those jobs. Now, if the counties give it back, the state workers would do those jobs for a higher salary. I think it's very important that we do memorialize at least the 95%, and hopefully when times are better, that they will pay the full amount that they would pay state workers. So that's the purpose of this bill. Would the clerk call the roll, please?
Senator
Monson.
Aye.
Senator Berger.
Aye.
Senator
Shelton.
Aye.
Vice Chair Cruz.
Aye.
Chair
Morrison. Aye. Senate Bill 646 will go to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and I will carry the bill.
Okay. I was shrinking.
Now, let me look at your sheets here. Mine is buried in here somewhere.
But we have that on this page.
Okay. We are not going to hear Senate Bill 716. I'm not going to have a work session on that. I have a constitutional amendment, or a constitutional problem with that bill. Okay, we're going to hear Senate Bill 702.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we previously heard this bill on March 16th. Originally, the measure clarified the definition of home care worker to include those who are paid in whole or in part by the Department of Human Services, area agency, or any other public agency, and to limit the definition to those that are registered with the Home Care Commission. It updates existing statutes to be consistent with constitutional language. We've received several amendments since that time. You have with you at the dais, I think you received them previously, to look at the dash 3 and the dash 6 amendments. Do you want them to talk about the dash 3 and the dash 6s? The dash 3 and the dash 6.
Yes. Would you come up, please?
Here's dash 3s.
Would you do the dash 3s and 6s?
Senator Morissette, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Megan Moyer. I'm with the Service Employee International Union, Local 503. And I want to talk about the dash 3 amendments, and I'll just clarify what the intent of each section is. Section 1 clarifies the definition of home care worker so that are covered by the Home Care Commission. This language clearly specifies that home care workers who care for seniors, people with physical disability, developmental disabilities, and people with mental illness and medically fragile children shall fall under the Home Care Commission, and that any new home care program established by the Department of Human Services shall also fall under the Home Care Commission. Section 2 requires that the Department of Human Services collect the names and addresses of home care workers. This information will be needed by the Home Care Commission to update the expansion of the registry, as well as to establish a majority of workers in a given program if they elect to form a union. Section 3 requires the Home Care Commission to maintain and update a to maintain and update a registry of qualified home care workers and requires the Department of Human Services to supply the Commission with the needed information to do so. Sections 4 and 5 modifies the definition of home care worker to say home care workers who are funded instead of paid by the state on behalf of a client in order to include programs where the state is not paying the home care worker directly, but rather going through a client or a third party such as a fiscal intermediary. Section 6 creates an effective date of Sections 1, 2, 4, and 5 of July 1, 2010. Section 7 repeals Section 2 of this Act on July 1, 2013. At this point, the Department of Human Services will not be storing the information about qualified home care workers, but rather the Home Care Commission shall have the updated registry operative, and Section 8 requires that Section 3, which is the registry, be operative by July 1, 2013.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I'm worried that maybe, and just let me know if these amendments take care of this, will these amendments hurt the department's ability to bargain?
Can you clarify in what manner?
I guess I just haven't taken time to know what the impact of these amendments are.
The only impact on collective bargaining that would be impacted is that it is on the date of July 1, 2010, in which these home care programs officially go under the Home Care Commission, which is the point in which these workers are granted the right to collective bargain, at which point they have to first go through a process of a majority of workers within each program must elect to be represented, choose that union, then they must elect bargaining delegates. That process is time-consuming, and then the actual collective bargaining process can be time-consuming, so the likelihood of reaching a contract in this biennium is minimal, if any, but it doesn't tie anyone's hands, per se. Whatever the department is currently legally allowed to do in respect to collective bargaining with home care workers currently under the commission will be permissible under the expansion of 702. Nothing changes in the process of collective bargaining.
Okay. I think I get that. Just some follow-up here. Regarding, we had talked earlier regarding we're hoping that this won't set up a situation that's going to hurt the buying power for clients.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with bargaining and requiring things, it means the home care workers will definitely benefit, but I don't want to see it a situation where then this is going to prevent someone who really needs the care to be able to have a home care worker.
There will be Dash 6 amendments that's going to be presented. We've worked closely with Catherine White from the DD Coalition on this particular issue, which is of very serious concern, to make sure that clients continue to have the access to the amount of care that they need and their purchasing power and their choices. So we are in support of the Dash 6 amendments, which Catherine White will be presenting after me. But it does go to that very concern. And we are very supportive of that issue and want to make sure that we safeguard consumers.
Okay. Other questions? Yes. Oh, Senator Berger.
Yes, that was one of my questions. My other question is there any way that this will reduce funding to people with disabilities? In other words, would there be any kind of impact that the funding somehow would be reduced to people who have been receiving assistance?
Again, I think, and hopefully Catherine can also address it, that is the intention of the Dash 6, is that we safeguard against that very likelihood, and so that in the process of collective bargaining, if a result were to be an increased cost, that would need to be the burden of the Department of Human Services and not borne by the consumer.
And when do we see the dash six amendments?
We have them.
We have copies.
Yeah.
I can show you mine if you'd like.
Catherine, okay. would you introduce yourself, please?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Catherine White, and I'm here on behalf of the Oregon DD Coalition. And I wanted to kind of put the amendments into some context. Clearly, the issues of workers' comp, insurance, benefits, and fair wages are critically important to people with developmental disabilities and their families. And we have, and we've spoken with Megan about this, real concerns in terms of this legislation. There are significant differences between, and it's not the fundamental desire and concept in terms of getting benefits and workers' comp. There's a significant difference between the way the Home Care Commission and people on the senior and people with physical disabilities side of the department get services. Their services are allocated on an hourly basis. A person is assessed, they get a certain number of hours allocated to them. On the DD side, services are, and these services were designed with stakeholder involvement, and I have to say this is the first time we've seen something as significant potentially as this without engaging our stakeholders, and so we want to make sure that our stakeholders are involved. Our services are a pot of dollars. Then the family and the individual disability and a case manager or personal agent sit down and decide how those dollars should be used. It is a minimal amount of money. It doesn't meet everybody's needs, but some of those dollars are used for goods. They may be used to build a ramp. They may be used for some other kind of thing. The other pot is services. Some of those services fall into the clear definition of home care service. Some of the services that people buy look very differently. They're not home care services. It may be taking someone, the same person may be taking someone out and training them on how to use buses. So those services may look very differently. Our concern is that the cost and the complexity of pulling these pots of dollars apart will create significant change in the way the service system and the philosophy of the system. All of that being said, this amendment is specifically targeted. We know there's a fiscal, and I don't know if you've seen the fiscal statement. And some of our concern is that the actual implementation in this kind of a budget climate may result in our services being reduced in order to meet the additional expenses. And part of that has to do with the way IT systems work and the way our dollars are allocated. So I guess what we're saying is that this is an effort to address that. What became recently available and is still somewhat unclear is the minute that individuals are identified as being eligible for home care worker status, the training kicks in. There's some question as to whether other expenses may occur prior to collective bargaining. So while I'm proposing this amendment, it may not be enough to protect us is what our concern is. I guess that's it. Thank you.
Thank you for that clarification. Can you let me know if the Staley's agreement complicates this issue also? Tell me what the Staley's agreement does again and if this enters into this at all.
Mr. Chair, Senator Mona Anderson, the Staley agreement was the result of a lawsuit on behalf of Medicaid-eligible individuals with developmental disabilities who were not receiving services. The settlement agreement it set up a system of service with heavy stakeholder involvement. And again, I have to say, this is based on a belief that individuals who receive the services have a better idea of what they need, and frankly are more cost-effective. You're scratching people where they're itching rather than telling them what they need. So the Staley settlement is implemented through a series of brokerages, nonprofits around the state that receive dollars, meet with the individual, and it is on a capped waiver. In other words, there's only a certain amount of money that is available to the individual. Then they plan their services, and they hire or spend on goods people to help implement their individualized plan. So, yes, this does affect Staley services in the sense that these would be many of the services that would be folded into the Home Care Commission. The uncertainty here is then what would the role of the brokerage be? Does that change? I guess I would say that this is putting a square peg in a round hole, and I'm not so sure that we couldn't, given an opportunity, work out a way to better match the hole in the peg. That makes sense?
Yes.
Chair Morissette, members of the committee, I would like to address specifically the breadth of 702 and what it does and does not do. 702 does not create statutory changes to how programs are administered. It does not limit choices. It does not in any way speak to the brokerage system or any of that. And intentionally, that is not what this bill is about. This bill specifically relates to a home care worker. And so as Catherine has appropriately pointed out, home care is a component but is not the breadth of many of these programs. This bill is specific to the home care worker in each program, and the intention is to have one uniform system in which Oregon gives home care workers access to the vital training they need, give consumers access to a registry so that they can find, which is a major issue for many consumers, so they can find a provider in their area, but does not limit their choice if they choose to have a relative, friend, or neighbor that is still perfectly permissible. Senate Bill 702-3 and all its implications is limited specifically to the home care worker and the terms in which they work. It does not, so even under collective bargaining, we would have no right to talk about how the brokerage system was set up or any of those things. It is very tailored to specifically the working conditions and wages of a home care worker. So although I very much appreciate, and I think it needs to be on the record, the importance of consumer input and how these programs are organized and implemented, and that they must continue to be consumer-centric, that choice is fundamental to these programs, that is not an issue that is even permissible under Senate Bill 702-3. But I would very much agree with how important those issues are.
Okay.
Real quick question. Why couldn't you bargain this instead of putting it in statute?
All of the dash three? The intention of Senate Bill 702-3 is to have the Department of Human Services come into compliance with the Oregon Constitution, which was a result of Ballot Measure 99. Ballot Measure 99's language says, creates a home care commission and defines a home care worker as someone who serves a senior or a person with a disability. It was in rule where the department limited the scope of home care commission to seniors and people with physical disabilities. It is the intention of this to broaden that to the full inclusion of all peoples with disabilities, home care services to them. So without Senate Bill 702, it would probably require a legal process to bring compliance under the Constitution. I think this is a far more preferred method of doing it. I think it's more thoughtful. It allows for a lot more stakeholder input, deliberative process in this. But the intention of Senate Bill 702 is to put the home care, all home care programs, yeah, in compliance with the Oregon Constitution.
Yes.
Mr. Chair. So, but in fact, many of these workers are independent contractors, and so this is giving them collective bargaining ability.
They are currently being treated as subject workers. I misspoke when I used the word independent contractor. But
on this bill.
But in practice today, they are not in a collective bargaining unit. Based on how the rules have been administered, they are not under the Home Care Commission, and it is the Home Care Commission, about Measure 99, that gives workers the right to collective bargaining.
Follow up?
Okay.
So are they independent contractors, or are they employees?
They are, for the purposes of how they are treated today. Actually, statutorily, they are home care workers and should be under the Home Care Commission and have go to bargain. But as they're treated today, this is probably a good question for Mr. Taves. I want to say that they're called...
Dave, would you come up, please?
What is the term?
Yeah, I was going to call you up anyway.
Well, point of clarification. Yeah. I mean, they're either independent contractors or employees under the Internal Revenue Service definition, state definition. So I'm just looking as to which they are.
Madam Chair, I think these employees at this point in time would be classified as domestic employees.
Independent contractors. They're not given a W-2 with withholding and Social Security coverage, et cetera.
Madam Chair, Senator, no, they are. They're not independent contractors, so they're still considered like a domestic employee. So the parent or the guardian or the individual actually hiring them would still be responsible to do the W-2.
So, again, follow up then. So their employer is paying Social Security, workers' comp, and all those things.
Madam Chair, Senator, I can't. I'll have to get the details on that. I can't answer that just off the top of my head.
Okay. While we have you here, to the best of your knowledge, is there a fiscal impact on this bill, with this bill?
Mr. Chairman, yes. But, and we have submitted a fiscal with all kinds of qualifiers because we're unsure exactly how things would phase in. We certainly believe there's a fiscal for the, because again, this sort of phases in over three biennia.
Yeah.
There certainly is a fiscal for 2011 through 13, because as of July 1st, 2013, anybody in these six different programs now with different definitions and different bits and pieces that are home care versus other goods and services that Catherine has described would have to go to the home care registry to get that portion of their supports that are classified as home care. So we would have a major development phase during 2011 through 13 to put together the information systems to actually be able to extract that information and to put that then on the registry as of 2013. And of course, we're still concerned about that because the department's senior budget still goes off the cliff in 2011-13 when the federal stimulus terminates. What's unclear is what the cost would be for 2009 through 11, because there is a requirement that we put together a database of people called home care workers. There is a provision that the department, the union, and DAS could begin collective bargaining. Every attorney I've talked to at DOJ isn't quite sure what that means, if there's a recognized unit or the possibility of a recognized unit before 2013. Does that then start in certain things like workers' comp, unemployment insurance, things of that sort? We don't know. So the fiscal we provided has just lots of different qualifiers in that regard.
Okay. Senator Verger, you had some questions.
I did. I guess that the thing that is concerning me is not so much what your bill is about, which is the home care worker. I'm pretty comfortable with that part of it. But the people in my constituents who are involved with the developmentally disabled are very concerned about the unintended consequences of the bill. So I was hoping that Catherine would reassure me that I didn't have to worry about that. But the Dash 6s are not a guarantee, obviously, of those unintended consequences. So I'm wondering, how do I get there when I'm okay with the home care worker, but I'm not okay with unintended consequences to the developmentally disabled?
Senator Morissette, Senator Verger, I think, it's difficult to talk about unintended consequences that may result not based off of the language, but I validate that because I know that that's a very real concern. I think what's important is that we look at the history of how home care has been implemented since Measure 99 for those programs that it has had the jurisdiction over, and what we see is significant decrease in turnover. We see significant increase in training. We see a higher quality of care, ability to take care of more acute clients in their homes, and greater independence. And I think that a lot of that actually stemmed in the collective bargaining process from the intention of the worker. And one thing I'm sure many of you have had the opportunity to meet many of our home care workers through lobby days and other activities, and repeatedly what they will talk about before they talk about wages, before they talk about benefits, is the best interest of their client, and their very serious concern about what would happen if the hours of their client were reduced. What would these things do? So I would hope that you all, when you think about the consequences, remember who the players will be. Now, we don't, in the collective bargaining process, would have any discretion about how the department chooses to implement, but I feel the department has always been a good actor in their intention, and what I can speak to is that the workers have repeatedly put the interests of their clients at the top of their requests in bargaining, and I anticipate that to continue, and I would hope that both the department and any collective bargaining unit would not only really try to be deliberative about every consequence, but to include the advocates. And that's what is unique about the Home Care Commission versus bargaining directly with the department, is the Home Care Commission is actually made up of a variety of different stakeholders, consumers, there's a AAA representative there, and so we're not actually bargaining with the department. We're bargaining with people who have that perspective, who think about the client as the center of everything that comes out of it. Again, this bill does not dictate how the department deals with the other parts of each program, and again, I think that that's a relationship between the stakeholders and the department. This only would pertain to the home care worker, but I really think that there's actually some good precedent to see how these things have rolled out, and I think they've really been in the benefit of clients.
Mr. Chair.
Yes. Well, wait a minute. Now, Senator Verger, did you have...
I think Catherine is going to respond
okay.
My...
Mr. Chair, Senator Verger, I think that I definitely agree with Megan on this in terms of the quality of services. That's not the issue that we're questioning. I think you put the word to it, and that is unintended consequences. The Home Care Commission, prior to the creation of the Home Care Commission, there was a lot of work that was done for several years in designing something that would fit the population that was being folded in. There were many discussions. There was lots of involvement. I think that our main point here is that the structure and the way services are configured and integrated presents a challenge with this model, which isn't to say another model similarly represented might not work. It's just that we believe there will be unintended consequences as we try to disaggregate a system that we have intentionally designed to be very integrated. And so, you know, I think that that's more the issue than the quality or the need for this, remembering that over 65% of the individuals that are hired, for example, in the Staley brokerage system are family members. So those issues of choice are critically important. It isn't that it isn't workable. We're just reflecting some concerns that there will be unintended consequences and that the lack of funding may come out on our backs.
Further discussion. Senator Bridger, have your questions been answered sufficiently?
Well, I think that it leaves it that there is a possibility that the funding are in the bargaining in order to do a good thing. That there could be the consequence of some people in that particular community being having less funds, which is certainly a concern to me. And I'm just wondering if there's anything in the Dash Sixes that could be added that would serve that purpose. In reading the Dash Sixes, it seems that you've tried to get to the core of it. And actually, when I read it, I felt a little relieved, Catherine, that would be it, but you don't seem to think it gets there.
Mr. Chair, Senator Berger, I think that one of our concerns is we put the language in collective bargaining unaware that there may be expenses that occur prior to collective bargaining. This doesn't totally address the way services are delivered, but that wasn't exactly related to the bill. It's just, in general, our desire to try and make something fit what the intent is. And we continue to have concerns that 702 doesn't fit our system in the way we could potentially have something fit our system better.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Catherine, if you were queen for a day and had, what do you think would be a satisfactory move at this point? This is an important bill, obviously, for a lot of people. So what would you be more comfortable with, or what could you do that you would feel better about it? Can it be handled after this committee passes it out? Is there something we can do?
Mr. Chair, Senator Berger, if I were queen for a day, which is a nice alternative. I think my preference would be to sit down and try and put something together that really provides benefit to our system and doesn't put things in jeopardy in terms of some of the design. And that may be a direction that we would get together and come forth in February with something that maybe the model would fit better. That's my queen for a day.
All right. Thank you, Catherine.
Okay. Senator Cruz.
Thank you. Catherine kind of said where I was going with this. I think, Ms. Chair, we get confused with merit and implementation. Mm-hmm. And I'm not denying merit, but when you look at the bill and the fact that we have delayed implementation, if the pieces aren't all right on the front end, we will be back here in February. I don't see why we don't try to make a better mousetrap here before we do it. I mean, that would be my choice as well.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Now, right now, does it have a fiscal?
We have not received
one.
So we don't.
Although that could happen.
There may be one by this evening.
Yeah, by this evening. But even if there isn't a fiscal, I mean, is this something that could be addressed then if there's no fiscal, which I think it was designed so there'd be no fiscal for the 09-011, but fix it on the House side?
Yeah. Well, wait a minute. Mr. Taves, did you have something that you wanted to add?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we did submit a fiscal, so I'm not sure why it hasn't come your way yet. And we did include costs for 09-11, but with lots of qualifiers because we're not quite sure what some of those duties in 09-11 might imply. The big fiscal really hits in 2011-13 and then 2013. But I just wanted to mention, I totally understand and support where Megan and Catherine want to go in terms of protecting consumers here. From a department point of view, though, this is interest arbitration. This is a non-strikeable workforce, so ultimately the rights and the benefits to workers can go to binding arbitration. To say that all the budgets of these programs that benefit these individuals can't be touched somehow to add to worker benefits to preserve the buying power simply means we're not sure. Because the department then would have to make up those costs somewhere else. And I don't know if the implication is we cut other programs in to make up the costs potentially for interest arbitration in this program. So I understand conceptually and from a consumer point of view exactly where people want to go, but this is interest arbitration, and the costs would have to be borne somewhere within the department if, in fact, collective bargaining reaches additional benefits for these workers.
We're going to close the work session right now and carry this over until this evening and wait to see if we do have a fiscal. So we will be meeting at 6 o'clock this evening. Senator Montes Anderson.
Mr. Chair, I move to reconsider the motion to suspend the rules on Senate Bill 158.
Senator Montes Anderson moves to reconsider the motion to suspend the rules on Senate Bill 158.
Mr. Chair, yes, discussion. I feel that we could possibly have the fiscal by this evening, and therefore I think that we should just suspend the rules and see if the fiscal's ready, and then we wouldn't need to suspend the rules.
Oh, Mr. Chair.
Yogi Bearism, I think.
Mr. Chair, a motion is not necessary. The chair could carry it forward to this evening. The bill's still in play.
Okay.
Okay. So I don't think you need a...
I want to be sure. So can we just make a motion to suspend the rules to just in case legally we aren't? It only takes a majority of the committee.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Senator Montes Anderson moves to suspend the rules to reconsider...
just to reconsider the motion to suspend the rules.
To reconsider the motion to suspend the rules.
Huh?
Okay.
The motion to suspend the rules was defeated. The motion to suspend the rules, if necessary, could be made again without suspending the rules.
We want to bring the bill back.
And that's my entire intent. I don't know if we need to move. I think Senator Cruz needs to reopen. I just want to make sure that we can reopen unless Senator Telfer is willing to withdraw our motion or withdraw her or actually vote.
We close the work session.
We close the work session.
With no motion on the table.
And we're going to recess.
All the chair has to do is reopen. So there's no need to suspend anything to suspend something.
I think you're absolutely right.
Okay. We will carry this bill 158 over till this evening.
Okay, that's all that needed to happen. So,
okay.
Are we with the rest of this?
We have three more.
Okay.
Let me look.
We have
287 is closed assignments. Okay, we'll open a work session on Senate Bill 287.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I had some
We moved the dash one.
We did. And I had some concerns with unintended consequences.
Oh, no.
but I also had a lengthy discussion with Mr. Jundep about this. I think at this point in time, my comfort level is relatively high, that the unintended consequences is not a place the agency wants to go. So, so I think I'm okay.
Okay. Okay. Well, a nod is as good as your presence up here, I guess.
This is 287.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
But we don't have the fizz with us. Do we?
We got it this morning. Mr. Chair, we got this morning. We previously had our no revenue impact statement, and this morning we received a fiscal statement, which basically indicates that the passage of the bill would have a minimal fiscal impact on the Department of Human Services because it does not create new programs or workload for the department. DHS believes the potential for contested case hearings is also minimal given the historical record of developmental disability residential training treatment facility or home and adult foster homes. Okay. We received that this morning.
Okay. Did you have a question for Ms.
Chair? No, my real concern, Ms. Chair, was the fact that you could have a holder of a license that had multiple facilities, and the fact that they could have one facility that was underperforming, and that the department would jerk the license from all the facilities that licensee had, but the unintended consequences of that would be huge because then the department would have all these people they need to find places for. So I don't think that's going to happen. Okay. I think at the end of the day, it's maybe some leverage that can be used, but at the end of the day, I seriously doubt the department would shut down a facility without an inspection. So with that, and I think that's true, and with that, I'm okay.
Okay. Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Yes.
Senator Berger.
Did that happen with Spencer House?
Mr. Chair, Senator Berger, I don't know the answer to that question, but I do.
Mary?
Okay, we're not going to hear this one.
She will when she gets up here.
They had multiple facilities, but I don't know if they had out-of-state facilities. So.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'm Mary Gear, the Administrator for Licensing and Quality of Care with Seniors and People with Disabilities, Department of Human Services. Mr. Chair and Senator Verger, Spencer House was an assisted living facility, so it was licensed through our Seniors and People with Physical Disabilities program, which is not covered by this bill and the Dash 1 amendment.
Okay.
And just for the record, excuse me, I just want to identify myself as Bob Jundep from Disability Rights Oregon. Thank you.
So thank you, Mary. I just wanted to make sure.
On the 22nd.
Yeah. Okay. Ms. Chair.
Mm-hmm. Senator Cruz.
I move Senate Bill 287 as amended.
We didn't do the dash ones.
Yeah, we did.
On
we
the 22nd.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. As amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And does it have a subsequent?
No. Very small.
No, because it's
it does not have one on it. Okay,
yeah.
That's all I need to do.
Okay. Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill
287
to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Okay. Would you call the roll, please?
Senator Monson.
Aye.
Senator Berger.
Aye.
Senator Telford.
Aye.
Vice Chair
Cruz. Aye.
Senator
Marshall. Aye.
Thank you, Bob.
Senate Bill 287 will go to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and Senator Cruz will carry the bill. the reason I say that
I won't care about these anymore
is because we had Senator Cruz and I had a discussion about the bill. He did talk to Mr. Jundep and had a conversion.
No, just the reassurance.
A reassurance. Okay. And so he will carry the bill to pass his reassurance onto
good
the body.
Goes unpunished,
to
right?
The body. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Now.
So we have
876.
We're going to do 51.
And 550. So those are the two we have.
Okay, we will open a public hearing on our work session on Senate Bill 551.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 551 was originally heard on March 16th and then again on April 22nd. Required Department of Human Services to provide through area agencies emergency services to senior citizens and persons with disabilities who lose home and community-based services due to reductions in funding. Requires Department to study impact on individuals of reductions in funding and report to Interim Committee of Legislative Assembly. It sunsets January 2nd, 2012. We do have a -2 amendment which adds the provision which specifies those entities that the Department of Human Services must implement a plan for providing emergency services to senior citizens and persons with disabilities who receive services beginning July 1st, 2007 and lose services during the biennium beginning July 1st, 2009. It modifies the provision that requires the department to maintain records on specific entities in order to contract with a private entity or individual to conduct a study on the impact of the termination or reduction in services on noted individuals. It appropriates an unspecified amount from the general fund to the Department of Human Services beginning July 1st, 2009 for carrying out provisions of the measure. And it adds a provision declaring an emergency with the measure taking effect upon passage. We have not received a fiscal impact statement on the -2 amendments, but it would have to have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means as it has an unspecified amount being referred to in the bill.
We don't want the ones.
No, they don't want the
ones. Okay. Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I move the -2 amendment to Senate Bill 551.
Senator Cruz moves the -2 amendments to Senate Bill 551. Discussion?
Mr. Chair,
yes.
It'd be nice to have... I see what, it's,
yeah,
I see what it does.
Fill in the blank thing.
Yeah, okay. Never mind.
Okay, further discussion.
Well...
Yes.
When do we fill in the blank?
They do it in Ways and Means. If they fill it in, it's in down
right.
There.
Yeah. Okay, further discussion. You move the -2s. Okay, Senator Cruz moves the -2s. Further discussion, seeing none, so ordered.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I move the rules be suspended for the purpose of referring Senate Bill 551 as amended by the -2 amendments to the Committee on Ways and Means without a fiscal statement.
Okay, Senator Cruz moves suspending the rules to move Senate Bill 551 as amended to Ways and Means without a fiscal statement. Would you call the roll, please?
Any discussion?
Discussion.
So this is a legislative mandate to a department to do something, and we have no idea how much this is going to cost.
Right. Ms. Chair, the purpose of this is a fill in the blank, and we do fill in the blank things from time to time. Does this have merit? Yes, it does. But rather than put a dollar amount in there, I mean, this is a long shot, to say the least, that dollars end up here. But if we don't send this down there, dollars will never end up there. So, you know, it just keeps the concept and the necessary funding in play.
And Mr. Chair,
yes.
And just to follow up too, and we do not know if there might be some other monies
right.
That may be available
right.
Through the stimulus dollars or that, so it just is a tool down in Ways and Means just in case.
Okay. Other further questions, comments? Okay. Call the roll, please.
Senator Monis Anderson?
Aye.
Senator Berger?
Aye.
Senator Salter?
Aye.
Yay.
Aye.
Sam Morrison?
Aye.
That was to suspend the rules.
That was just to suspend the rules. Yeah.
Okay. And before I make the motion, let me say I fully understand Senator Telfer's reluctance because we send a lot of things to Ways and Means, but I think we are also planning our substantive committees, once we're done with Senate bills, to do an internal prioritization to inform Ways and Means of what we think are the most important of the bills we have sent them. So we will try to be helpful as we move forward in the process. And with that, Mr. Chair, I would move Senate Bill 551 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation with a subcon referral of the Committee on Ways and Means.
Senator Cruz moves 551 to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Would you call the roll, please?
Senator Bonas Anderson.
Aye.
Senator Bruce.
Aye.
Senator Telfer. Aye. Vice Chair Cruz. Aye. Chair Morrison. Aye. Oh.
Aye. Okay. The bill is on its way. Yes.
Senate Bill 7, Senate Bill 8, 76.
That's the last one I have in here.
It is.
Yeah, how'd that happen?
Richard, would you come up, please?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this bill has been heard three previous times, April 6th, April 8th, and April 22nd. The initial bill required the Department of Human Services to pay for brand name rather than generic immunosuppressant drugs prescribed in connection with organ transplants. We did have a dash one amendment, which one of the things provided a definition of narrow therapeutic index drug and so forth, which we talked about at the April 22nd. There's no revenue on this bill, and we received this morning a fiscal statement was issued, which indicated that passage of this bill would have a minimal impact on DHS.
Mr. Edge.
Chair Morissette, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Jim Edge with the Department of Human Services, Division of Medical Assistance Programs. The dash one amendment to this bill would change the bill somewhat. It would actually make the bill very close to what we currently do administratively. It would require the department to make a determination of whether an immunosuppressant drug has a narrow therapeutic index after the patent has expired. The difference between what we currently do and what this bill would require is that currently we make that determination after there is generic competition on the market. This bill would require that that determination be made within 180 days of the patent expiring. We actually prefer the way we do it administratively, but given that, I would say that if you decide to pass this bill with this amendment, we could live with it, and it would have a minimal fiscal impact. We would have to make a rule change. We would have some administrative burden from having to do this more quickly, and under some circumstances, it might require some additional administrative work. But as I said, we could live with it.
Mr. Kosasin.
Mr. Chair, Richard Kosasin with Astellas Pharmaceutical. The amendments, I think, have been crafted in a manner to narrow the scope of the measure considerably, highlighting the significance of immunosuppressant drugs, specifically with respect to transplant patients, directing the department to make a determination whether certain immunosuppressant agents would constitute a narrow therapeutic index drug. And I think, the department, I appreciate the department's time and effort. They've been wonderful to work with. And I think the amendments would be a productive step forward.
Unless you object. It doesn't have a referral on it, so we don't have to do anything other than
Okay. We're in work session.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash one amendment to Senate Bill 876.
Okay, Senator Cruz moves the dash one amendment to Senate Bill 876. Discussion?
Discussion.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I'll still be a no. I think that we worked so hard to get a system, a process in the state of Oregon to review all our drugs, and it is a very good. I don't know if the 180 days is if that could be done, because so again, we have a process, and it would, and it works, and I just don't feel a need for this bill. Thank you.
Other comments? Okay.
You just say, Mr. Chair, this, because there are 21 senators as co-sponsors, this might have a chance of passage. I'm not sure.
But the two health gurus, aside from Senator Morissette and you, were not on the bill.
I understand.
Or as same as on the House side.
Yes.
Oh, what does that mean?
Nothing.
Who knows? It's a random statement at this point in the day.
Okay. Now, was there an amendment? That was,
yeah.
The motion is on the dash one.
Okay, we have a motion on the dash one amendments. Further discussion? Seeing none. So ordered.
No discussion. Now the vote on the on the amendment.
On the amendment. Okay.
Okay. Further discussion? Seeing none. So ordered.
Mr. Chair, note that Senator Mona Sanderson objected.
You want to just call the roll?
Okay,
on
call the
amendment.
Roll. Call the roll. I'm sorry.
No.
Senator
Parker.
Aye.
Senator Tillman.
Aye.
Senator
Tillman. Aye.
Aye. Okay, the amendment passes.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 876 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves 876 to the floor with a due pass recommendation as amended. Further discussion? Okay, would you call the roll, please?
Senator Montana.
No.
Aye.
Senator Feltman.
Aye.
Senator Cruz.
Aye.
Chair
Montana. Aye. Okay, Senate Bill 876 goes to the floor with the due pass recommendation, and Senator Telfer will carry the bill.
Mr. Chair, look at my bill file.
Okay, with that, we will close the public hearing, and we will adjourn.
No, until we will recess.
We will recess until this evening at 6
p.m.
And the purpose of 6 p.m. tonight is...
We will...
It's two bad bills.
We will look at Senate Bill 158, and we will look at Senate Bill 702.
Hoping to get the fiscal impact on the amendment.
Yes. Okay.